Hi, this is Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings. Today, we are joined by a singer, songwriter, who's also a music producer and an international name in the business, Lorena McKennitt, who has a new album out. Plus, she's celebrating another album at the same time on the tour. So we welcome Lorena McKennitt to Border Crossings and the Voice of America.
Thank you very much.
You got a lot going on, and we're going to cover everything that's going on with you. But the first thing, you're from Canada originally. And you chose Celtic music and harp as your passion, as your career. What led you to Celtic music and the harp?
Well, I was part of a folk club in Winnipeg in the late 70s, and that was the first time that I heard Celtic music, and I was instinctively smitten by it, the sound. So it had less to do that my family history comes from Scotland and Ireland. A number of the members of that folk club had with them recordings that we swapped back and forth. And I thought, oh, well, this would be great to immerse myself in that. But I was still at a very early stage of my career trying to decide whether I was going to be in theater or music theater or what I was going to do. But I kept my finger in that traditional pie until about 1985, when I made my first recording, Elemental, in 1 week.
Wow, that's amazing. Are there many world-renowned, accomplished harp players like yourself? Is that an instrument that is very, very popular?
Well, to be honest, I'm not a very accomplished harpist. I would say that I play enough to accompany myself singing that I would not want to put myself next to a formally trained harper. But the one individual who I did hear that influenced me incredibly was from Brittany. He's still living, Alain Stavel. And one of his recordings called Celtic Harp Renaissance was very influential for me.
And that's a big instrument to be busking with. Normally people have a guitar case, they open up the case, throw some money in, and they do their thing. How did you travel around busking in London and elsewhere with a harp?
Well, the harp that I play is actually a student instrument that many classical harpists learn to play on before they proceed to a classical harp. It's by Lyon and Healy, a company in Chicago. But at the time that I was looking for a harp, I was the proud owner of a 1978 Honda Civic. And that sort of dictated what size of harp I left around. But I did busk in Toronto on Saturday mornings. I live in a small city, about 80 miles away, called Stratford, and on Friday nights I would pile my harp in the Honda Civic and drive up to Toronto, crash in a friend's couch on Friday night, get up very, very early Saturday morning to get the best busking spot, and I'd stay there till about midday. But if I had a classical harp, it would be a very different story.
Mm-hmm. And you also did busking in Dublin, I guess. You went to Dublin. So you've traveled around the world busking.
Yes, well, I was actually working at the Abbey Theatre in 1988. Oh, yeah. I was composing and performing music live for their Millennium production. Yes, I bussed on Grafton Street from time to time and almost got into a fisticuff with the flower sellers. And then, in Covent Garden in England was probably my most favorite busking story, where a policeman was asking me to move along because I had encamped there on a street where they didn't allow busking. And just when he was about to remove me, a woman comes from my right-hand side and intercepts him and says, there's a man right behind me who's exposing himself. And couldn't he take him away instead? And he does. So I maintain I was saved by the flasher.
And so, anyway, you have performed on many of the different stages around the world, in different countries, continents, and whatnot. So is there a difference in the audience, or what would, pretty obviously there is a difference, what would the difference be in a European audience versus an American audience, North American audience, Canada, the U.S.?
They're even more, they're smaller sub pockets. You know, in Canada, the audience in Quebec is less reserved. They're more quick to respond. They're more emotional, passionate type of thing. You get outside of Quebec and people are very conservative and they're very sitting, waiting and so on. I remember performing in Japan and everybody was like really dead silent until the very, very end. And then they just exploded and they wouldn't let you leave the stage. I mean, in the United States, it varies from community to community. If you get into some of the bigger cities, and you're performing on a Friday or Saturday night, people are ready for a good time. They may respond a bit differently than in rural America on a Tuesday night. But it's all good, you know. We give them our best.
Lorena McKennitt is our guest here on Border Crossings, and so we talked a little bit about the fact that you busked in different places, toured and performed in different places. Do you have favorite places you like to go and perform?
Oh, I don't know. I don't really. I mean, there are some, I've performed in some extraordinary venues. Some of those have been in Europe, and particularly in summer festivals. For example, we've performed at the Acropolis in Athens, and various Roman amphitheaters and so on. I performed at the Alhambra in Spain. In fact, I worked with WNET, Great Performances out of New York to do this whole concert out of the Alhambra. But for us and for me in particular, my deep commitment is to give a strong performance worth for the people who are there wherever I am, and hopefully it means something to them.
At what point in your life did you want to do this professionally? When did you decide this is the commitment I'm going to make to this career?
There was no moment, really. I wanted to be a veterinarian. And I maintain that music chose me rather than me it. I actually started off in university in what I thought was going to be agriculture. But a number of performing opportunities came my way, and I knew I would always wonder how far or where I would end up in a musical career. But to be honest, I never thought it would be like this. And I still maintain I have the internal disposition of a veterinarian. I don't have, the fame part is a byproduct that is not of particular attraction to me.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that. I thought most people love the adoration of the crowds.
No.
That's not what you're after.
No. I think, you know, for me, it's just knowing that the work that I'm doing has meaning to other people. I think each of us, whatever it is that we do, we want to feel that our efforts have meaning. And so for me, I just feel very, very grateful to have landed in this career path that has taken me all over the world and introduced me to so many different kinds of people and has allowed me to do something that I feel has some meaning.
Well, we're happy to have you on. Lorena McKennitt is with us. Are you going to do a couple songs for us? What are you going to do first?
We're going to do Lost Souls.
Why don't we give a listen to a new piece of music from Lorena McKennitt? This is something that she performed just for us. It's called The Lost Souls. Thank you. Border Crossings, it's Lorena McKennett, The Roads Back Home. Now, which home? Because you've lived in a lot of places.
Right. Well, I mean, I grew up in Manitoba and I stayed there until I moved to Ontario to work at the Stratford Shakespearean Theatre in 81. And that remains my constant home. But it's interesting, you know, the subject of home, it's it not being just a building that you live in, but really a fabric of people and rituals or habits that you have each day, or the people that you meet, even the person that I still buy a newspaper and I feel that, and I get together with some friends for coffee first thing in the morning. And for me, that is the bigger sense of home, or all those people and those things that I do. So Southern Ontario is my home, but I do have a very fond part in my heart for a few other places.
And you mentioned that, you know, you were at a festival in the 70s. So having been a part of the music industry as you have for a number of decades, you've been a part of all the changes in the business. The technology changes and the marketing changes, the way that they, you know, now with their kind of like evolution, they're selling singles again, but they're downloads, you know, and it's kind of different.
Yes, it's been quite an interesting era that I've lived in and been in the music business. I remember when I started out recording in 85, there were all these studios, there were orchestras in the CBC, there were orchestras everywhere. But as technology evolved, I mean, first of all, it was more like synthesizers that were putting some musicians out of work. But I think what we're really seeing now is that the music industry, after having sort of still around after 20 odd years of the internet, there's one half of the industry that is pretty much collapsed for the artist or the creative class, and really what remains is more of a touring business. And I think this is because the technology has been allowed to be unleashed without regulation and without some controls. When I think back, we would be paid like 25 cents per 25 cents per song in a recording, like a vinyl or CD. But on Spotify, I would be paid 10 cents per 1,000 plays, or on Google Play, 0.00013 cents. So it's not a very viable business model but I'm lucky because my career was built at the height of right up to 98. Mm-hmm. But it's changed drastically. But it's only one now of many, many industries who have been hit pretty hard as a result of the unregulated internet.
Mm-hmm. So what inspires you? What do you have certain music you like to listen to when you're not making your own particular music? Do you have different genres you turn to, or who do you get inspiration from?
I study classically, but it really didn't interest me to be performing in classical music, but I did acquire a certain skill set that is classical. And I do suppose when I am working at my office, I often will put on some classical music, which is not too demanding. But I love to listen to other kinds of world music, particularly if I'm going to Portugal, there's Fado music, and if I'm going to the Middle East, there's so many different kinds of music from these different places that I like home. I love a wide spectrum. That's it.
What is the Visit Revisited tour? Explain what's going on there. The Visit Revisited.
Right. Well, The Visit was my fourth recording that we produced in 1991. I think it was made available in the United States in 92. And it was really the first recording that was distributed by a major label. So it sort of catapulted my career from being a local Canadian artist into a whole international landscape. And The Visit, so the tour is a recapitulation of that recording. We the first set, we perform pieces from across the catalog, but in the second set, we perform The Visit from in order, all the pieces straight through to the end. So, and my musicians that are working with me. Brian Hughes worked with me on The Visit back in those days. I've been working with Brian since 1988. Hugh Marsh, the violinist, he's been working with me since The Visit. Caroline Lavelle, who was the cellist, it was like a Lethal Weapon. She's so fabulous. Well, they're all fabulous. And Dudley Phillips, it plays double bass, and then I play harp and keyboards. So that's pretty much what the performance involves.
So how about the Book of Secrets Revisited? Is that the next tour?
Well, it's certainly been thought of. It was certainly my biggest recording, particularly with the Mummer's Dance. Hit, which we never expected. Yes, we're seeing, you know, in the springtime, we're going to Europe to present more of The Visit Revisited. I think next summer we might be doing a version of The Mask and Mirror. And if the music industry lives so long, we'll be considering the Book of Secrets.
Well, let's hope it does. Yeah, I won't have a job if it doesn't. Lorena McKennitt is our guest, and I did want to ask you, what is a mummer?
Well, a mummer is still done in Ireland and in Newfoundland. People who get dressed up in costumes, it's like a version of Halloween, but people go out at Christmas time or St. Stephen's Day, and they don't say a word, as in mum's the word. And they'll often dress themselves up as parodies of politicians or religious officials and so on. They would knock on the doors of people, and the people would welcome them in. There would often be a fiddle player or some musician of some kind, and they would often dance a set, as they would say in Ireland. So there's a particular dance pattern that these costume individuals would come into the household and do this dance. And as they leave, they would be given food or money or something or other. And they just travel around the village or the town doing this. It's pretty amazing. When we shot the Mummer's Dance video in Ireland, and I had someone who was my local fixer, and the locals near Corrafin in County Clare all made these wonderful, wonderful mummer's costumes with straw and so on. And we shot that video very much in a cottage in County Clare, and it ran pretty much as a real mummer's event.
Do you remember where you were when you heard yourself on the radio for the first time?
Oh, I don't. It's pretty sobering.
You don't go, hey, in the car next to you, that's Marion.
Yes. As a very reluctant public person, I don't know.
1997 was the year that that song was out and earned you a lot of attention and acclaim. You were in the top 10 on Billboard in the U.S. and in the U.K., and you were number one on the AAA charts as well. Tremendous success story. And then it was re-released, remixed by DNA. Did you ever hear the remixed version?
Yes. Well, that was really interesting, because in the fall of 97, somebody from Warner Brothers Records in the A&R department said, would I be open to having it remixed? And it was interesting, because when we were working on the song, we've been recording at Peter Gabriel Studios in England, in the village of Box, since about 1993. And when we were recording it that spring, I thought, I've run out of time and maybe run out of a bit of money, and we're going to keep to the schedule of releasing it. But through building the piece as we did, I realized how I kind of would have wanted to address the rhythmic side of it. And so when this person from Warner said, would you be open to it being remixed? I said, well, to a degree, I can't have it stretched to be something that I'm completely not. It still has to be, resembles something of what I do. So as it turned out, DNA, they're just living up the road from Peter's studio. they did that. And I thought, comes much closer to, you know, the drive of the rhythm that should have been there in the first place. So yeah, that was pretty crazy.
And that was a time in 97 when they used the term new age music quite a bit.
You know,
they don't use it as much anymore. I don't often hear Enya and different kinds of new age artists anymore.
No. I mean, it was a title that was sometimes applied to my music. I think it was out of default, out of just organizational wherewithal at retail. People just needed to know what bin.
What section does it go in?
But I always felt a bit uncomfortable with it because I felt that New Age music was more atmospheric. And though there may be some atmospheric dimensions to my music, I felt there was a lot more focus and a lot more going on lyrically and arrangement wise than it being just, you know, atmospheric kind of music.
We're very lucky to have Lorena McKennitt with us, who is on the road touring. She worked through COVID. She managed to record music during COVID, write music during COVID, and survive to tell about it. We're all lucky and blessed at that. And so I wanted to ask, as far as the new album, which is The Road Back Home, what's going on with that album?
Yes, I mean, The Road Back Home is sort of, you know, there are two projects actually in this period of time, sort of the end of, well, there, we aren't complete through COVID, but a couple of years ago, I worked on a project called Under Winter's Moon, which is a more esoteric, well, maybe esoteric's too strong, but there are some other lesser known Christmas and winter carols infused with spoken words, some indigenous storytelling, as well as a rendering of A Child's Christmas in Wales by a very, very highly awarded actor in Canada called Cedric Smith. And I joined forces with some Celtic musicians from Stratford to do some better known carols in between those chapters. And as a result of that experience, this past year, I thought, well, why don't we go back and look at some of the traditional repertoire that first it excited me when I became smitten by the Celtic music. And so I got together with those musicians again, and we headed off to two or three folk festivals in Southern Ontario. And as we're often wont to do, we'll record them. And if they seem to stand up, we'll, you know, release them for folks. So it's a special recording of the traditional material that I really became smitten by. And Wild Mountain Time, is certainly a piece that I'm quite fond of. It probably is one of the very earliest pieces I learned, even before I acquired the harp, when I had a guitar and I taught myself to play it upside down and backwards because of this way. But the whole Winnipeg Folk Festival connection with that piece is pretty strong. And it was interesting because one of the festivals that we recorded this at was at the Summer Folk Festival in Owen Sound, Ontario. And the director happened to be one of those musicians I stood on the stage in Winnipeg all those many years ago, James Keelahan. So I asked him if he'd like to come on the stage and just sing a verse with us. So that's what he did.
Wow. Speaking of inviting people to sing with you, is there anybody that you is on your wish list you'd like to collaborate with that you, if you were given the opportunity to pick three people dead or alive that you'd to work with?
I'd have to think about. I mean, I have to say, from many years ago, I've been very infatuated with Tom Waits's music. And I love the poignancy of the roughness of his voice, but his wordsmithing and how, so he would be one. There's a wonderful group from Paris called La Pagietta. Christine Pluhar is the lead person there. They're like a Baroque orchestra, but they will also do traditional folk music from South America or from the Mediterranean, and I have a few of their recordings. I don't know, you know, Peter Gabriel.
Why not? Get the studio for cheap.
Yes.
Lorena McKennitt is our guest today, and we're going to ask you to do another song. I mean, maybe Wild Mountain Home might be.
Yes, the Wild Mountain Time be the piece that I recall back from the Winnipeg and the folk festival days and the very, very beginning of my career.
All right, Wild Mountain Time. Here is Lorena McKennitt on Border Crossings.
Thank you.
Border Crossings, Lorena McKenna at Wild Mountain Time. Were you getting wild on the harp? Is that what's...
Oh, no, again, back to the beginning. I wish I could play that with that well, that I could get wild with it, but no, it's a pretty forgiving instrument, you know, when you start out. I mean, it's much more forgiving, let's say, than the trumpet or a violin, where you have to really develop technique. It's you just pluck the strings, and it's a bit like learning to type a bit.
Now, you are a colonel in the Canadian Royal Air Force, a Royal Canadian Air Force. You don't look like you'd be flying a jet around, but I guess maybe that's something you like to do.
Right. Well, this came through a roundabout way, personal tragedy, actually. My fiancé died in a boating accident in 98.
I'm sorry to hear that.
And I raised between $3 and $4 million on a recording that we had made that year called Live and in Paris and Toronto. And we forged a water safety organization, a charity called the Cook-Reese Memorial Fund for Water Search and Safety. And also in Winnipeg, there is part of the Air Force. There's 435 Squadron, which is a transport and search and rescue squadron. And when they were looking for their honorary colonel, they approached me, having grown up in Manitoba, but also having this whole connection to search and rescue through the charity that I have. So I was with them. I flew all over. I flew right up to the far north end of Canada, up to Alert, which is right at the very top of the country, down to Key West. I participated in some other international training sessions, one in Canada called Maple Flag, where different air forces come from different parts of the world and they train together. But then about 8 years ago, I became the honorary colonel for the Royal Canadian Air Force. And certainly one of my focal points has been to not only understand what these serving members are doing for Canada and the international community every day, but also have an appreciation of how their families are. And in the Air Force, they move around quite frequently, maybe every 3 or 4 years. And that puts on special challenges on spousal, employment, schools, doctors, all those kinds of things. So the role is really a bridge between the civilian population and the Air Force. The Army and the Navy have their honorary colonels as well. Mm-hmm. So it's been my great, great privilege to be associated with the Royal Canadian Air Force. Mm-hmm.
Did you get to ride in a jet? Did they take you up to 5 Gs? Oh. Or?
Well, I flew with the Snowbirds, which are their display term team. I sat in number 5, which is right in the very back. That was pretty crazy. I remember, because you study all the patterns before you go up with the team, and you go on, put on your equipment, and I had to spend about 2 days just practicing, you know, the ejection but we got up into the aircraft, and number 5 sits in the very back of the V, I expect, because if the person they're transporting is not very comfortable, they can pull back. But they go up, and then they say, okay, we're going to shake out. So they go up and they go down, and all this stuff comes and they pull up together and they go into formation. They do this formation. They come back, and I hear in the headset the lead saying, okay, we're going to do that again, but a little tighter. I think, oh, you can't go any
No,
closer.
No, I'm going to eject.
But I certainly flew around in a C-130 Hercules a lot.
Wow.
435 Squadron, went into theater to like Lithuania, Kuwait. I've been to Romania a couple of times, and certainly seen a lot of, you know, your country, men and women, in the travels. It's a very, very impressive, very impressive group of people.
Mm-hmm. And you are, since you're talking about, you know, all these European countries that you visited, are you going to the Ukraine? Is that somewhere at some point you want to go? Now is not the best time to be there, but do you envision, because I know you're trying to help the Ukraine people.
Right, right. Yes, I mean, in Stratford, where I, you know, make my base, we've helped bring in and support Ukrainian newcomers. And I personally am hosting a mother and her son. But we're not going right to Ukraine, but we are going pretty close in next spring. We're going to be, I don't know, within 100 miles of the border, I think, in Poland on our European tour. So, yeah, it's a very, very tricky time, very tricky time.
Yes, indeed. It's the Visit Revisited tour that Lorena is on and will continue to be on throughout 2024. If people want to find out more information about you, where do they go? How can they connect with you?
Yes, the best way to connect with us is going to our website, and we have lots of information there. But also, if people want to be briefed on any new recordings or tours, to sign up to our LM community. We bailed out of Facebook about, 2017. So we don't engage in a lot of social media. And that's largely because I have such strong feelings about the unintended consequences of it, but it does make it more challenging for us to reach people. So we really encourage people to come and sign up.
All right. Well, that sounds great. Lorena McKenna, thank you for joining us on the show today.
My pleasure. I'm
glad we were able to have you back on. You're always a pleasure to talk to, and I love the sounds. I love your music. And so hopefully around the world, when you see that it's advertised that Lorena McKenna is going to perform, make sure you go and check out the show, the Visit Revisited tour. Thank you, Lorena McKenna, for joining us again on Border Crossings. We appreciate it.
It's been a great pleasure, Larry. Thank you so much.
This is Border Crossings, and you're watching VOA TV.